Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
I don't know how many of you saw the video of Cam Newton getting kind of taunted by a looked like a high school kid at a 7-on-7 camp. If you haven't seen it, it's kind of gone viral. You can track it down, and you can watch it for yourself. And it struck me, first of all, I love watching Cam Newton play football over the course of his career. Let me just start there. Cam in college, in his year, and I know, Dub, you are as big of a Cam fan as possible because you're an Auburn Tiger alum. Cam in his year, where they went and won the championship with Auburn, in I guess it was 2011, I think it was. That was, other than Joe Burrow a couple of years ago with LSU, to me, Joe Burrow is one, Cam Newton is two, for the greatest individual single season I've ever seen a quarterback have in college football. Cam won the Heisman Trophy. He won a national championship. He won an MVP in the NFL. His team went 17-1, lost in the Super Bowl to finish 17-2. Cam came close to pulling off a quad that almost no one ever does playing football. Heisman Trophy, national championship, NFL MVP, and he came within a scintilla of becoming a Super Bowl champion as well. That is one of the greatest resumes you could have in football anywhere. And I don't know about you, I saw this kid and he was like taunting Cam because he's a free agent. And it just represents to me everything that's wrong with social media, where everybody gets their phones out, and if you see somebody who is the least bit famous, you chirp at them and you say something in the hope that you're going to get your shine off their reaction. And to me, that video, which circulated, and I'm not even going to play it on the show, and some people will say, why even talk about it? Because I think it's emblematic of the era that we're finding ourselves in right now, where if you are someone of Cam Newton's stature, everybody is looking at you all the time, and they're trying to find a reason to tear you down. And that's what I thought that kid was doing. Now, Cam put up a statement on Instagram, and he said about the video, what you didn't see. I see there are a lot of things festering out there that have took place over the weekend. To the natural eye, you see me asking the young man, where is your dad at? But to me, talking to a child with everyone looking does me no good. So instead of speaking or going back and forth with a child, I wanted to have a man-to-man conversation with his father. People often forget, as athletes that are often seen on TV, loved by most, hated by some, people often forget we're real dads, real friends, real brothers, real sons, real human beings, etc. With that being said, when I attend tournaments all across the country with my all-star team, meaning the 7-on-7 team, I've given my time, my energy, and my expertise to these kids coming into our program for over 11 years. That's not what people want to hear or even want to see. People want to see me arguing with another young man and see me, quote, get in my feelings. But the truth is this, I impact kids' lives in a positive way. Make no mistake about it. I allow kids to realize they're out by using their football talents to get them to the next level, and in most cases, out of the hood. So with that being said, have yourself an unbelievable rest of your day. I think Cam is a fascinating dude. I really do. Because I can only imagine, he's a free agent quarterback right now, and that's like what the kid is taunting him with. But what kind of universe are we living in when a kid is taunting a Heisman Trophy winner, a NFL MVP, and a college football national champion, a guy who played in the Super Bowl, who is volunteering his time to try to help young kids get better at football? I don't understand how we've gotten to a place where videos like these go viral. And I got to give Cam Newton credit here, because some people say, oh, well, you should never talk to the kid. But no, he's a coach. If a kid is acting up on the sideline, the job of a coach is to straighten that kid out. And so it would be easy for Cam Newton to never care about coaching a 7-on-7 team. He's made, whatever it is, $100 million probably in his career. Been fabulously successful in that career. It's not, I don't think, his career going to end like he would like it to end, right? I'm sure Cam Newton would have paid tens of millions of dollars. I bet he would. I really do. To be able to finish his year winning a Super Bowl with the New England Patriots, I think he would give up a ton of the money that he has right now and a lot of his assets to win a championship like that. But I wonder where we are with every kid having their phone and everybody trying to provoke people like that kid was doing to Cam Newton, taunting him about how he's a free agent when he's a volunteer coach at a 7-on-7. And to Cam's credit, he's like, hey, where's your dad? Where's your parent? I want to have a conversation with your parent, I think is what Cam's saying, about why you're behaving the way you are. And by the way, that's what a lot of different Little League coaches have to do. Because we got kids that are behaving as kids always have in such a fundamentally ridiculous way. But I think social media has sometimes put that behavior on steroids. And so I got to give Cam Newton credit for the way he handled that kid and for also his post that's up after this video went viral of him getting taunted by a kid. I mean, what is this kid thinking? Of all the millions of people who have ever played football in their lives, Cam Newton is one of a handful of the most successful to ever do it. And he's giving away his free time to try to help high school kids use their talents to get, as he said, out of the hood, to use the ball instead of letting the ball use them. And there's kids showing up taunting him. It's everything that's wrong with social media. I hope those of you out there have kids of your own, showed him that video and said, you better never be this kid, because that's what I did with mine. This is OutKick, by the way. I hope all of you are having fantastic starts to your Friday. Up next, Albert Breer, breaking down everything in the NFL from Sports Illustrated. This is Fox Sports Radio.
This is OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis.
Albert Breer joins us now from Sports Illustrated. He has been getting the inside scoop on a lot of the drama surrounding the NFL quarterback position in general. Albert, appreciate you getting up early with us, especially when I know you have a column that you stay up late writing on Sunday night. So many thanks for coming on with us. So you have gotten into the nitty-gritty of exactly what went on with Carson Wentz and with the Philadelphia Eagles. And so I'm just going to kind of cue you up here. Now that he's with the Colts, was this a must decision from the Eagles? And what went into this trade being put together?
Yeah, you know, I think things have just kind of gotten rotten between him and the Eagles. And, you know, I think part of it's the Eagles' own doing in that they'd propped him up as if he'd won that Super Bowl 3 years ago, even though he didn't. And, you know, I think for a multitude of reasons that caused things to go the wrong way. He didn't relate with everybody in the locker room. And, you know, I think certainly the way that Nick Foles was able to relate with people in the locker room sort of only highlighted that Wentz has struggled to kind of reach certain guys. So there's that. There's the fact he's making more money than anybody else. There's the way he was treated. You know, and then I think, like, some of the guys he had that were allies by the end weren't really his allies at all anymore. And the primary one, I think the best example would be Doug Peterson. You know, I do think some trust was broken when they drafted Jalen Hurts because that kind of blindsided him. You know, but I think there was some of that, the stuff that happened early in the year when Hurts was elevated to the backup. And then when Hurts, you know, started to get into wildcat packages that rubs Carson the wrong way. And now all of a sudden the guy who had been the good cop, Doug Peterson, and Wentz, their relationship went south to the point where after he was benched in week 13, like, Doug and Carson only communicated via text after that. And it's just, I mean, when that's your head coach and your quarterback, your play caller and your quarterback are at that point, and you wind up firing the head coach, and you've already fired other coaches because they didn't get along with Carson Wentz, I think it sort of gets to the point where you start to ask questions. And then when he asked out, you know, I just think the Eagles kind of came to the conclusion there was no running this back. Like, if Carson Wentz was going to get fixed, it simply wasn't going to happen in Philadelphia.
So let's kind of look big picture at Carson Wentz now, because I am really intrigued to think about what might happen with him going forward. You mentioned that things obviously broke down in Philadelphia, and the reclamation project that everybody is pointing to, because the NFL is a copycat league, is Ryan Tannehill gets to the Titans. He finds magic there and gets a $100 million deal. And the Miami Dolphins, who've been trying to replace Dan Marino for a quarter century, look around and think, my God, how could we not get this out of him? What happened that he changed scenery and all of a sudden everything went better? If you are a Colts fan, that's what you're hoping that you can get out of Carson Wentz. The difference is, in a positive way, Wentz's ceiling when he was with the Eagles was way higher than, I think you would agree, what Ryan Tannehill's ceiling was with the Miami Dolphins. So can they get him back, or is this a Cam Newton-like situation where a guy may have had an incredibly high ceiling, but he doesn't have the goods anymore to get back there again?
Yeah, you know what? I think the comparison that you, what you'd be worried about, might, the better one might be RG3. And the reason why, they're both supreme athletes. They both have top end, you know, physical tools. And early on in their time in the league, both those guys benefited from really creative scheming, and that covered up some of their weaknesses, and they both wound up getting hurt. So, like, if I'm, you know, the Colts, the one concern I would have is this RG3? Now, the flip side of it is that you've got the guy who was scheming for him in Philadelphia in Frank Reich in Indianapolis as your head coach now, and nobody knows better how to do it and how to get him to that place than Frank Reich. So, you know, I'd say even the Colts aren't 100% sure that what they're getting can be what the Eagles had in 2017. But I think, you know, it's pretty easy to see that given, you know, what they've done in building the offensive line up there, and they're going to have to replace the left tackle who retired, Anthony Costanzo, based on some of the young skill position players like Michael Pittman and Jonathan Taylor. And then, you know, based on the coaching staff that's there and their knowledge and their institutional knowledge of who Carson Wentz is as a player, I think you can easily say it's the best place for him to go to revive his career. So if his career is going to be revived, if this is going to be Tannehill and not RG3, I mean, I can't think of a better place for it to happen than Indianapolis based on all the conditions there.
Albert, one of the things that I like to pay attention to is the odds market, because you can gamble now on where guys are going to go. And before news officially broke that Carson Wentz was going to go to the Indianapolis Colts, the number suddenly popped all the way out to minus 1,200 that Wentz was heading to the Colts. And then within a few hours, boom, news is out there. So somebody knew something and started to move the number in terms of where Carson Wentz was heading. It hasn't moved that aggressively yet, but the Denver Broncos at the end of the week slid into a favored position to be the team that Deshaun Watson was playing for when the season began, 2021. They were, I think, down to plus 150 or something like that. And there hasn't been as much Broncos talk with Deshaun Watson as there has been some other teams. I've continued to say I expect him to be at Houston because I just can't imagine them moving on from him. Do you think there's any smoke to the Denver Bronco talk? Where and what do you think happens with Deshaun Watson?
I think if he's going to be moved, it's closer to the draft. I think the Texans are playing with an advantage that other teams that might move their quarterbacks aren't playing with. You know, if you're the Eagles, or you're, say, the Jets now with Sam Darnold, if you're going to move your quarterback, you got to be concerned about timing because there are a certain amount of seats, and once those seats fill up, you know, you could just be SOL, you know.
Like what happened with Jameis Winston in the offseason, kind of, right? Like there were just not enough jobs open.
Yeah. So, like, if you're holding on to your quarterback and you've got a quarterback like a Sam Darnold or a Carson Wentz, I mean, you have to be cognizant of the timing. I actually think the Texans are in a situation where they're immune to that because of who Deshaun Watson is. I think they can move him in March, move him in April. I don't think it really matters when they move him. They're going to get a good return for him. And so what's fascinating about it is if they wait till a draft, and, you know, that would be the first real deadline because that's, you know, the last point at which you can get a current year pick. You know, seeing some of the teams in the top 10 that could make a move for him that are sitting there with sitting quarterbacks right now, the Dolphins, the Jets, the Broncos, all those teams are in position right now to make a move for him and give the Texans a top 10 pick back. And so, and each of those teams, if you look at some of the resources they have, could wind up being good situations for Deshaun. So I think all three of those teams, because, you know, they have young quarterbacks that they could go forward with, but they don't necessarily have to go forward with. They each have top 10 picks. And I think, you know, at least in the case of the Dolphins and the Broncos, there'd be some talent around those guys, around Deshaun if you were to go to those places. I think all of them are viable. And the Broncos, to me, of those three, are sort of particularly exciting because of the young receivers they have in Courtland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, and KJ Hamler, and an offensive line that played a lot better towards the end of the year. So, yeah, I'd say if he is going to become available, it's probably closer to the draft because the Texans do have the flexibility of trying to work things out with him over the next 6 or 7 weeks. But the draft does sort of, I think, create the first real milepost. And, you know, if you're going to move him, you know, I think you probably want to get a top 10 pick back. And there are teams within the top 10 that I think will be attractive situations for him.
You mentioned all the different moving parts, and you mentioned Sam Darnold there. It seems to be a foregone conclusion that the Jags are going to take Trevor Lawrence. And by the way, we're talking with Albert Breer at Sports Illustrated. What do you think the Jets at 2 are going to do? Because they feel a little bit like the linchpin in terms of where things can spin in the draft. Because if they move on from Sam Darnold and take a quarterback, that obviously becomes an interesting move. If they decide to stick with Sam Darnold, they might be able to trade back for somebody who's in love with a quarterback other than Trevor Lawrence. And the guy who seems to be climbing up boards and become maybe a consensus too, with some teams saying, hey, maybe we like this guy more than Trevor Lawrence, and I don't know how much of that is smoke and how much of it's real, Zach Wilson at BYU. What do the Jets do? Do you think Zach Wilson is becoming a clear number two to most teams in this draft?
I think the three quarterbacks behind Lawrence are all, like, worthy of going within the top 10 physically. Like, all those guys have the physical skill set to go within the top 10 picks. But I think different teams are going to see them differently. So it could be that Wilson is seen as the, like, consensus number two. And I don't think I'd argue with that he'd be the consensus number two. I just don't think it's like this overwhelmingly strong number two, right? Like, I think some teams will like Fields, some teams will like Lance. And, you know, and I think for the Jets, that's part of this process too. Where they are right now, they've fielded calls from teams on Darnold, and they basically told those teams, hey, just check back with us because we're still going through our process. And part of their process is holding Wilson, Fields, and Lance up against Darnold. And I know ideally they would like to see those guys throw live before they make a final decision on what they're going to do with Darnold and whether or not one of them is worth throwing Darnold overboard for. The problem with that is the timing of it. You know, North Dakota State's pro day, I believe, is March 12th. But BYU is not till March 26th, and Ohio State isn't until March 31st. And that's going to be the only chance you have to throw them live, see those guys throw live, because the private workouts have been outlawed and there's no combine. And so this is a little tricky for the Jets in that they'd like to get a full assessment on the three quarterbacks. They could take second overall. But because of the timing of things and some of those seats that we spoke about, like filling up, they may be forced to make a move on Darnold a little earlier than that.
What do the Cowboys do with Dak?
I think they tag him. The injury situation is what it is. I don't know that Dak's completely out of the woods on that yet, but, I think you sort of have to tag him right now. And then from there, they do everything they possibly can to negotiate a long-term deal. And they put themselves in this situation, Clay, where and Dak's got all the leverage now, because to tag him again in 2022 would cost them over $52 million. And now Dak can look at it and say, okay, so you tag me at 37 this year, and then either I'm a free agent at 28 next year, or you're giving me $52 million next year. So you've got to beat those scenarios. And that's going to be difficult for the Cowboys to do, particularly because they've waited this long. Dak's probably not going to cut them many breaks. So it's going to be an interesting situation to follow. Every indication I've gotten from the Cowboys is they still view him as their long-term quarterback. But because they've waited as long as they did, because they held such a hard line over the last couple of years, I think it's going to be another difficult negotiation.
You mentioned the lack of visits and being able to interact because those are forbidden because of COVID. Also, the combine, yep, which would ordinarily be happening, not much different than right around now. I think, in fact, it might start at the end of this week, usually. Do you think when we come to the draft, we were having a conversation about this with another guest in the second hour, and I kind of talked about it a little bit with some people at OutKick. My inclination is that the small school guys are going to be hurt a ton by the combine not existing and by not having the visit, because you don't lose your job if you say, hey, I drafted a guy from Ohio State or Alabama and they didn't pan out. And you're we watched them on tape. They played against all the best competition and maybe their ceiling wasn't as high as we had hoped. But, you kind of shrug your shoulders and say, what can you do? We went and got the most proven guys from the most proven programs. And I think that's even more likely to happen now. Like, the Power 5 conference guys seem like they're getting advantaged by the lack of travel and the lack of combine. Yeah. Would you buy in with that? Do you hear anybody talking about that at the NFL?
Well, yeah. And I mean, I think that, consider the guys who didn't even play this year. You know what I mean? Like, there are FCS guys that didn't play this year I think are at a big disadvantage. The Senior Bowl was important for some of those guys too. I think a couple things are going to happen. Number one, I think teams are going to be more risk averse this year. And so if a guy has a character issue, like, there's not going to be a chance for a team to get face to face with a guy, bring him into their building, go visit him on campus. And so like say a guy's got like a serious discipline problem in his past or was arrested or anything like that. Like, are you going to be able to get comfortable enough with a guy over a Zoom call where you're willing to take that risk, and invest millions of dollars in a guy? I think because of that, teams are going to be a little bit more risk averse. They may be more risk averse from an injury standpoint too, because part of bringing guys in to your building is you getting your doctor a look at him.
That's
right?
A good point too.
Can't do that anymore. So that's another part of it. And then I think the one thing that you could look for here too, there may be some teams that are looking to bail out of this year's drafts altogether. That might look at teams where maybe the coach is on the hot seat and say, hey, we'll give you this year's one for next year's one, because they're less comfortable with this year's draft class. And honestly, Clay, I think the first sign of that coming actually happened with the Jamal Adams trade, where part of the deal for Seattle was they felt like a low first rounder in 2021 was going to be devalued by these dynamics. And so they were more willing to deal that first rounder away to get Jamal Adams, because they felt like they would have less information on prospects this year. So I think that all of those things are going to sort of play into the way teams approach this year's draft. And again, like, just being more risk averse, I think, is sort of the underlying thing to the whole thing, where whether it's character, injury, whatever it is, I think teams are going to be a little bit less willing to roll the dice on guys.
I keep hammering this on the show because I do think for your average fan out there, it's a far bigger story than is being talked about, and that's what the salary cap's going to be. They announced that the new floor, I believe, is going to be at least $180 million. Two-thirds of teams are basically over the cap if it had been $175 million or whatever that number is. That acts as a massive difficulty when it comes to free agents, when it comes to planning ahead. What do you think this number ends up being? And for people out there who haven't been paying attention to this storyline, why does it matter so much?
Well, first of all, I think the television deals are going to play into this. And their ability to get the new set of television deals done before before the start of the league year.
They want
March 18th.
Announce those for, March 18th. They would like to be able to announce television deals before then, right?
Yeah. So what they wanted, getting the cap back to a point where it's, close to what this year's cap was is going to be about borrowing money from future years. Some of the hardline owners view that as giving the players an interest-free loan, and they don't want to do it. But if you have new television money in, that mitigates all of that. And now all of a sudden the owners are going to be more willing to borrow back against future years to make this cap flat. That's a huge part of the equation, and I think if the TV deals don't get done, we're probably talking about $180 million cap. If they do get done, that number could go up significantly. And, the part of the reason that this is such a big deal beyond the obvious, which is, how it limits free agent spending, it's also about how contracts are structured. Teams have been forever planning their financials out where there's going to be a $10 million or so jump in the cap every year. And so if you look at any of these player contracts, what you'll find is their cap numbers go up each year. So you basically have a bottleneck for a lot of these teams where a lot of the contract numbers were going up, and now all of a sudden the cap isn't going up. It's going down. What you're going to have happen because of that, if the cap does go down, is a ton of veterans that are going to be flooding the market, that are going to be suddenly out on the market, cut. Some veterans getting traded. And then, you're going to have a saturated market, which isn't good, obviously, for the guys who are losing their jobs, but it's also not good for the free agents because of the supply and demand curve there, So it's going to be interesting because, if the cap does go down or even if it remains flat, I think you're going to have an unprecedented amount of players out there looking for jobs. And it's going to be really, really hard for the top guys will get paid. But, it's going to be really hard for anybody who is, around the middle class to get any sort of good deal. And, I think a big part of what we're going to see as a result is probably a lot of guys signing one-year deals and hoping to hit it again in 2022.
All right, last question for you. Of all of the attention that is being put on the quarterback position, Trey Lance is going to be a first-round pick. Almost no one listening to me knows anything at all about Trey Lance, North Dakota State quarterback. You said some teams may think he's the second-best quarterback in the draft after Trevor Lawrence. What should people know about Trey Lance and what NFL teams think of him? Who would be kind of the guy if you had to point to someone that you're hearing, this guy reminds me of X who's in the NFL right now?
I heard a little Dak Prescott comparison with him.
He's 6'4", 226 is what he's listed at. So that just for people's size out there.
Yeah, physically he's got everything you want. And if you look at his numbers, Clay, I don't know if you've ever seen this before. His touchdown interception ratio, his 1 year as a starter at North Dakota State, they won the national title, was 28-0. It was zero interceptions. He didn't throw – and then this year, what happened was this year, because the FCS season got pushed to the spring, they played one showcase game. It was against Central Arkansas, I believe, and he didn't play very well. And so, he had all this momentum coming off of his first year as a starter, and NFL people were talking about him. He wasn't Trevor Lawrence, but it's like this is a challenger to Justin Fields to be the second quarterback taken over the summer. And then, I think through things that are no fault of his own, he winds up losing his entire season, and then, everything kind of gets doubled back into one game, and he doesn't play very well. So I think physically, physically it's all there. He's like by all accounts, a really, really good kid. And I think teams are just going to have to kind of, you know, get comfortable with the idea of taking a guy who was a one-year starter at an FCS program who has, like, really high-end franchise quarterback tools and believe that they can develop them. That's really what it is. In fact, you know, I actually asked for a comp. Somebody said I mentioned Dak Prescott. Somebody actually put a Mahomes on him, too. I think it was Jordan Palmer. Somebody I had my podcast over the summer.
Yeah.
Like said, there was some home stuff with him, too. So, you know, you hate to put that on a kid, but his tools are really, really good, you know. And so, again, it's going to be sort of somebody being comfortable with a guy who only started one full year at a lower level of competition.
I know I said last question, but that made me think of one truly last question. I started off with Carson Wentz. Are the Eagles obligated, in your mind, to give the job for at least 1 year to Jalen Hurts, or could they take a quarterback at six?
No, I have it on good authority that they're going to go through all the paces with all the quarterbacks. So this is an interesting number that's in my column today. You know, Howie Rosen's been working for the Eagles for 21 years. They have had a draft, a top 10 pick, like slotted top 10, not trading to the top 10, but a slotted top 10 pick twice in that time. And so, you know, I think their attitude is, you know, they feel like they owe it to themselves to investigate every possibility. And the plan is never to be drafting that high again. And, you know, if you're in a position to draft a guy who you think can be your franchise quarterback for the next 15 years, and you're sitting there with the sixth overall pick, you got to do it. And if that makes it a little awkward for Jalen Hurts, well, then so be it. You know, that's far less of a problem than not having the guy to replace Carson Wentz. My understanding is they're at the very least going to look at Fields and Lance and Wilson and sort of hold them up against, Jalen Hurts and then make a decision that way. And, you know, it's quite possible that, you know, they wind up taking a quarterback six overall, and then whoever that quarterback is competing with Jalen Hurts to be the starter in 2021.
Man, you kill it, Albert. I really appreciate the time. I know how busy you are. We need to get you on as part of the regular rotation because we always get such good feedback. You can read him. Sports Illustrated, as you just mentioned, his column is up right now. We'll talk to you again soon, man.
Awesome. Thanks, Clay.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Albert Breer was fantastic, man. And he left me with this question that I think is looming over the Philadelphia Eagles in the wake of the Carson Wentz trade to the Indianapolis Colts. As much as we have paid attention to Wentz and how good he can be, whether or not he can be a difference maker, I think the bigger question here is, what are the Eagles going to do going forward? Because they thought Carson Wentz was going to be their quarterback of the future. Now that's not true. They've cleaned house. They got out from underneath his contract. But they drafted Jalen Hurts in the second round. So are they going to give Jalen Hurts the opportunity to be their starting quarterback? Or are they sitting at that number six position going to say, hey, we can't just draft another position here, because it's rare that we could be up this high. And there are a lot of quarterbacks that potentially could be going top 10 caliber, right? Just running through right now, you know that Trevor Lawrence is going one overall. Zach Wilson seems to have inched up. You just heard me talking about with Albert Breer. Seems to have inched up to potentially the number two guy. Three, four, and five, I think there's a lot of uncertainty about depending on the team, but Justin Fields, Trey Lance, and Mac Jones are all right there. That's five guys. Right now, I saw Todd McShay in his mock draft had five quarterbacks going in his top 12. So this is a pretty good quarterback draft. And if you're sitting there at six and you are the Eagles, and you do all the prep work on these guys, and you convince yourself, maybe it's Zach Wilson. You're like, he's the greatest quarterback ever, and maybe he falls to you. Maybe it's Justin Fields. Maybe it's Trey Lance. Heck, maybe it's Mac Jones. Whoever you convince yourself if you do, that that guy is a difference maker and a potential generational quarterback. Do you have enough faith right now in Jalen Hurts to say no to drafting a quarterback that high and sit back and go draft another position and say Jalen Hurts is my guy? I don't know. Brand new quarterback. Brand new coach. He's not got the opportunity to see Jalen Hurts a lot. He really hasn't taken very many snaps. And I think the Eagles are finding themselves in a really tough spot. Because, yes, they have moved on from Carson Wentz, but it's not a situation where they've moved on and the baton has 100% been passed and you're saying, okay, this new guy is our guy. I'll give you an example. When Tony Romo retired, the Dallas Cowboys knew that Dak Prescott was their guy. When Brett Favre moved on, the Green Bay Packers knew that Aaron Rodgers was going to be their guy. And I'm not trying to say that Carson Wentz is on that level. I'm just saying that it was a clear transition. You knew who was rising up to replace the quarterback that you were getting rid of, that was leaving, that was moving on. I don't get the sense that the Eagles know that yet. And we talked earlier about how the Jets at 2 seemed to me to be the linchpin of the draft because they could still make the decision, you know what? Sam Darnold is our guy. And if they did that, then they wouldn't necessarily have to do anything with a quarterback there. Maybe somebody else will trade up. They could go with another position. And everything can kind of get reconfigured. What we never actually see, usually, is the draft board. And you know how every team comes out every year, if you're an NFL fan? You know what every team says if they're drafting anything other than number one? We didn't expect him to be there. Every team that your guy has drafted for the last 50 years, when your GM and your coach have come out, you say, man, in all the mock drafts we had, we never had thought we were going to have the opportunity to take this guy. Well, I think a lot of times that's a lie, but it's amazing. Just pay attention to that. After every draft, it's one of my favorite things that we hear every team say, man, we never thought this guy was going to be there. We had to take him. They want to oversell their draft pick. Are the Eagles committed to Jalen Hurts? Should they be? It's one of the biggest stories coming up in the draft. We don't know yet. And it's the biggest story to me that's left after Carson Wentz is gone. Not what's going to happen with Wentz. What's going to happen with the Eagles? We'll continue to break it down for you. This is Outkick. Hope you guys have fantastic Mondays on Fox Sports Radio.